Hello, good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to Health Chat. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Lenoir Mudu. An estimated 1.1 million HIV infections among children under 15 years old have been averted, according to data released by the UN's Children Fund ahead of World AIDS Day. HIV is the virus which leads to AIDS. UNICEF said new infections declined by over 50% between 2005 and 2013 as a result of the provision of services for the prevention of mother-child transmission to millions of pregnant women living with HIV. The sharpest reductions took place in eight African countries: Malawi, Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, Mozambique, South Africa, and Ghana. However, the global goal of reducing new HIV infections in children by 90% before the year 2015 is still out of reach. That's according to UNICEF. While all other age groups have experienced a decline of nearly 40% in AIDS-related deaths up to 2013, the rate is not falling among young people. Tonight, we'll discuss HIV infections among children. Joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is Dr. Chiwe Luo. Dr. Luo is the Deputy Director, HIV Program. She's also the Senior Advisor and Technical Team Leader, Country Program HIV Scale Up at UNICEF Headquarters in New York. Welcome to the program, Dr. Luo.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm actually just coming out of a very interesting discussion around how we can scale up diagnosis for children.
I see. That's very interesting. Well, if you'd like to participate in the show with a question or comment, please call us at 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Ask your international operator to reverse the charges. You can also email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com. But before we begin our discussion with Dr. Luo, here is an overview.
In a videotaped message for World AIDS Day, UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sidibe asked people to reflect on the lives lost to Ebola.
Ebola reminded us what we were going through at the beginning of the fight against HIV. People were hiding themselves. They were scared. Stigma, discrimination. We are not having any hope.
Sidibe says that thanks to global solidarity, social mobilization, and civil society activism, tragedy has been turned into opportunity. He says the lives of millions of people infected with HIV have been saved due to greater access to antiretroviral drugs. UNAIDS has what it calls a fast-track strategy to end the epidemic by 2030. The first phase sets targets for the year 2020, known as 90-90-90. Mitchell Warren is executive director of the HIV advocacy group, AVAC.
Coming out of the AIDS conference this year in Melbourne, Australia, UNAIDS talked about this goal of getting 90% of people who are infected with HIV to know their status, 90% of them to get on treatment, and 90% of those on treatment to be what we call virologically suppressed, that the antiretroviral drugs would suppress the virus.
Research shows the more HIV is suppressed in the body, the less likely a person is to infect someone else.
That's really great news, but if you do the math, going from 90-90-90, it works out to about 73% of people who are infected would need to be virologically suppressed. But keep in mind that even in the United States right now, less than 30% of people who are infected are virologically suppressed. So there's a huge amount of effort to translate this kind of rhetoric, this good idea of 90-90-90 into practice.
Warren says treatment alone won't be enough to make 90-90-90 a reality.
One of the points that AVAC brings up in our AVAC report is called HIV prevention on the line. Because to get us truly to zero new infections in the long term, which is the ultimate goal, is going to require prevention. So to get on that line to zero, we need HIV prevention. But that title also carries a double meaning, because right now, given all of this focus on 90-90-90, we believe that HIV prevention is actually in jeopardy.
The AVAC leader says prevention should be given greater emphasis in the UNAIDS strategy.
We need to be sure that we have very clear targets and resources and programs that keep prevention high on the priority along with treatment so that we actually can think about ending this epidemic.
Warren says ambitious plans like 90-90-90 can cost a lot of money.
Unfortunately, the funding is not there, and I think that's probably the most important reality check here at World AIDS Day. So we are at real risk of setting targets that aren't resourced, and therefore those targets could be unmet simply by the incredible resource gap at the global level. So we have these amazing opportunities to have impact on the epidemic, but it doesn't come for free.
Warren says knowledge gained during the HIV/AIDS epidemic can be applied to West Africa's Ebola crisis. Both diseases have bred fear and discrimination.
Having a clear human rights-based response is just as important as having a good public health response. And that's lesson number one. Lesson number two is that while we do all the important work of caring and treating for people, having a research agenda is critical. And the third important lesson, I think, that draws a connection between HIV and Ebola is that strong public health systems are critical for any infectious disease.
Nigerian health officials say a big reason it quickly ended its Ebola outbreak was the health infrastructure that had been set up to deal with polio and HIV. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Joe. Now we go back to our guest tonight, Dr. Chewe Luo, Senior Advisor and Technical Team Leader, Country Program HIV Scale-Up at UNICEF. Dr. Luo, first of all, tell us about the HIV Scale-Up program and the meeting you've been attending.
Yeah, I'm actually here in Cape Town, and this is a meeting that's been organized by the Africa Society for Lab Medicine. So we're discussing all issues around just the lab infrastructure in Africa and what we need to do to bring people together, including governments, to actually focus on this. And part, the high on the agenda is really the Ebola epidemic and the ability to which the lab infrastructure can respond in Africa. But one of the conversations we're having today was the whole issue of children and the fact that we're so dependent on good labs to actually make an HIV diagnosis for children. And part of the lack of progress, although we're making progress, it's not at the same pace as we have for adults, is because we've not been able to decentralize testing of children to the lowest levels of care as we've done for adults.
I see. Now, back to the HIV infection among children, there's some sort of good news a little bit that there's some reductions in some countries. What do you think explains for some countries doing better than others?
Well, as I said, we know what to do. We know how to treat HIV infection in mothers to get infection rates down. And so one of the key factors, as I've mentioned, is that as far back as 2002, the global community galvanized around trying to integrate HIV testing in maternal child health services in the lowest levels of care. That has been complemented in the last few years with really the global community moving forward aggressively and saying, we know what to do, we can eliminate mother-to-child transmission. Testing alone is not adequate. We need to simplify delivery of the most efficacious regimen to pregnant women. And, you know, the global plan for elimination of mother-to-child transmission was actually launched in New York by Ban Ki-moon with the goal of really reducing infections in children down to 40,000 or zero.
So given this report, how would you assess the progress so far?
We have reason to celebrate. We have reason to celebrate because, first of all countries that are most affected in Africa have put in place very robust programs to try and do this effectively. Most programs are offering testing of HIV testing to pregnant women in most antenatal care settings, with some success in some countries more than other countries, but where systems exist, where women are coming for ANC, what we're seeing is a lot of acceptance from the women themselves to have this test and to be put onto drugs. So countries like South Africa, countries like Botswana, countries like Swaziland, countries that have good health infrastructure are really moving ahead of the game. We still have a lot of problems in those countries where we have a little bit more instability, as we have some countries in West Africa, for instance, that have been in conflict for a long time. Those countries that have very weak infrastructure for delivering antenatal care or delivery or labor services to women, we're seeing less progress. But on average, the intention is there, the political will is there, and we're starting to see major declines in infection rates in children.
Yes, we have an email from one of our listeners. He's saying that in this prevention of mother-child transmission through testing of pregnant women, what happens to the father? When in the equation that the father falls, are the fathers tested too?
Testing men or couples
Yes.
has been a little bit more challenging because in most of our facilities in Africa, men don't normally come to antenatal clinics, let alone the delivery unit or the labor ward. It's very much seen, that agenda for most men in Africa is very much seen as a woman's agenda or welfare. And we've been trying for the longest time to put in place what we call couple counseling and testing in the clinic, but very few men are coming. And on average in Africa, it's about 20 to 30% of facilities actually see men coming with their partners to be tested. And fewer men actually come back for results. But in a country like Rwanda, I just want to talk about Rwanda, where the president there made it, put in the system, the monitoring of local mayors, administrative structures in every locale to make sure that the mayor himself was accountable for men escorting their partners to antenatal and then responsible for making sure that men actually get tested with their partners as a good practice, not just for HIV, but also the follow-up care of the baby. What we've seen in Uganda today over the last 10 years is that up to 90% of men in that system, in that country, where the accountability is actually on the administrative structures to make sure that men come in. Men are actually coming and reporting their wives. And we're starting to see impact, not just in terms of them supporting their wives in terms of their care, but also the follow-through in terms of support to the baby, as a very good impact on child outcomes and child survival.
And Dr. Luo, between the treatment and prevention, where do you think most countries are putting the emphasis, and where indeed should it be?
I'm the first to tell you that prevention in most of our countries has not moved in the same way as the treatment agenda. I mean, we have reason to celebrate, the number of people that are on treatment today, and we are on track to reach 15 million people next year, 2015, as the goalpost that we have set for ourselves. We're nowhere near reaching those type of ambitious achievements for prevention. And part of it is that we spent a lot of time trying to look at preventive strategies, getting the knowledge base around HIV and how it's transmitted. And we haven't been as successful to getting people wearing condoms, for example, when they, at risk of getting HIV infection. So unprotected sex continues. We haven't been very good at reaching out to other modes of transmission, like, injection drug use. And today, though, having said that, I think we have a lot more tools at our hands, like male circumcision, that we're now trying to drive as a way to actually prevent HIV infection. It's been slow to pick up male circumcision, but many countries are now starting to report success, like Kenya. So we will get there, but it's at a slower pace. And that's why the treatment agenda right now has become a key strategy for prevention of infection at population level. we have evidence that if we can get people to take their drugs and by suppress their virus in their system, we can actually have a dent on transmission people to people with treatment. So we are very optimistic that if we can rally behind the 1990 agenda of UNAIDS, where 90% of people know their status, 90% of people get onto treatment, and 90% of people are virally suppressed, we can start to see population impact of transmission rates to people, between people.
I see. Well, we're going to take a short break and we'll continue our discussion of HIV transmission in children, especially in Africa. We'll be back right after this very short break.
VOA Africa Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly. We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you are listening to Health Chat, and our topic tonight is HIV infections among children. And joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is Dr. Chewe Luwom, Senior Advisor and Tech and Co-Team Leader, UNICEF Country Program, HIV Scale Up. And a reminder that you can join this conversation by calling our telephone number 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. You can reverse the charges through your international operator. Now, Dr. Luwo, before we broke off for that short break, you're talking about the 1990 strategy. First of all, let's explain to our listeners what this means, the 1990 agenda.
So, in the overall discussion around what we need to do to control the HIV epidemic, and based on the knowledge that we have today in terms of the tools that can impact that, UNAIDS has come up with an ambitious target. And this is really based on some work that has happened on the African continent, where a group in West of North Carolina actually went out and looked at people on the African continent that were what we call discordant, so where one partner was infected and the other partner was not, and gave medication, antiretroviral medication, to the positive partner to try and test the hypothesis whether we could control transfer of infection to the negative partner. And that study actually demonstrated a 97% reduction in transmission risk between a positive partner with a negative partner. So when you apply that knowledge to the population, you start to see that for every infection that happens, especially on the African continent, there's an infected person that transmits it to the negative one. So the hypothesis around the 1990 is that if we can get more people that are infected on the African continent, for example, on treatment, and treatment suppresses the virus right down in somebody's bloodstream, we could start to see some of those impacts. And from the number crunching that UNAIDS has done with other scientists, we've come to agreement that the 1990 approach is what's going to get us to epidemic control in 2030. So if we can get 90% of people knowing their HIV status by 2020, 90% of those that identified are put on treatment, and if we can check that the treatment is actually having effects, and 90% of the people on treatment are actually suppressed in terms of the virus in the bloodstream, we can start to talk about controlling this epidemic by 2030.
Nice.
So it's a broad agenda.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take away from the fact that we still have to do the other prevention things that we've been doing, like circumcision, like harm reduction programs. And so those things have to continue. Condom use has to continue. And we need to make sure the messaging is right. But this is a bold treatment agenda. First of all, to keep people alive, but secondly, also prevent prevent infection spreading from people to people.
I see. Back to treatment, people taking their drugs, and they have been a great help to many people, especially on the continent there in Africa. But how accessible are the drugs now? Are they, can every patient who needs those antiretrovirals get them?
Fortunately, I think there's been a lot of goodwill from the governments themselves. We're starting to see a lot of governments now putting money on the table for treatment, whereas in the past, much of the effort was externally driven. Many more governments now realize that this is a good thing. They're seeing people, their own people survive, being productive. A lot of governments now have budget going into this. More than that, PEPFAR continues to provide support to a lot of the countries in Africa. Global funds with a new funding model, continuing to provide support, and both PEPFAR and Global Fund have prioritized treatment. And so when you actually look at this in terms of whether when people go to clinic, they have stockouts of antiretrovirals, the information or the evidence that we have is that that occurs in very limited situations. And where it happens, it's probably just a break in the system in terms of when the drugs arrive in the country and when the drugs actually get to the point of care. We shouldn't be complacent, and I think everybody understands that this is an expensive program, and we need to find new ways of financing the program. And I know that in Kenya, for instance, they were looking at having a levy for health. In Zimbabwe, that's already happening. And we need a lot more of this discussion on the African continent on how we're going to sustain these gains. And so part of the 1990 strategy is really to also look at, you know, what do we project in the future? We need to close the tap on new infections for these programs to be sustainable. At the moment, the rate of decline of new infections in population is not happening fast enough, and we need to change that paradigm. Hopefully with the 1990, we can start to see those shifts of reductions in new infections.
I see. Traveling across the continent, there have been people who have suggested that there needs to change the way the drugs are administered. For instance, instead of having drugs that are taken daily pill, perhaps having some injectable drugs that can suppress the virus for months at a time would be better. How far has your community gone in this direction?
I work with children, and part of my problem with working with kids is that, first of all, they don't like medicine, they don't like hospitals. But more importantly, when you actually look at all the children, adolescents who are going to school, some of these approaches do not be appropriate for that particular population. So we're following up the scientific dialogue very closely, and there's at least two products that are actually going into clinical trial, which is injectable products that should last in the system for at least 3 months. But they're going into trials now, and trials take a long time. So maybe it's not going to be another 2-3 years before we have something like that coming onto market.
I see. And I don't know whether you've heard about this, but there are some reports now that the HIV virus may eventually be becoming weaker and watered down and is adapting to immune systems. Do you think in some foreseeable future that the virus may be completely suppressed?
I think all this has to do with how well we run our program. One of the things that we need to do and we must do is to make sure that people adhere to their medication. They have to adhere to their clinic visits, and they need to make sure that they are being checked for viral burden, for checking for viral load, which is the third 90 of the 1990. Because what would be disastrous is if we end up having a resistant virus that will not, first of all, immunity will not respond to, but the drugs also will not respond to. So there is a messaging and advocacy around, it's not all about just, you know, taking drugs or getting drugs out there, but it's how we work with communities of people living with HIV themselves, doing some of the education around the importance of actually taking your drugs as prescribed. So you're absolutely right that we need to be very cautious, but I think we need to be clear that caution on the backdrop of knowing that this is probably the right way to go if we have to contain this epidemic worldwide.
We are about to run out of time, but in our conclusion, traveling across the continent, is the level of stigma down now that people now ought to know that having HIV/AIDS is not an immediate death sentence, that they can get treatment and live their lives normally?
I believe that it's getting better. I think one of the problems we had with this epidemic was just the level of fear that was associated with it. And the conversation around the mode of transmission and, you know, people making judgment of other people if they had the virus. But I think what has happened over time and what I continue to see in communities, and I'll tell you a good story in a minute, is that, in fact, there's more acceptance of HIV testing because people know if they are found to be infected, there's a solution. They're starting to see people in very sick getting up and going to work. That in itself has had a very positive impact in most communities. I'm actually surprised with some work we did recently in Nigeria, and you know, looking at the level of prevalence in Nigeria and the level of effort with the response, I was actually surprised that when we introduced HIV testing as part of child health campaigns, so taking testing to the community, where mothers are bringing their children for child health intervention, that over 80% of mothers agreed to be tested, and of those that were tested and found to be positive, 80% were actually able to go to the clinic to seek for more care. So for me, that's 6 million, because it means that the word is out there, and people know that it's actually a good thing to know one's status rather than to wait until things get worse. So I believe that as we do more advocacy, more discussion around these issues and what we're trying to do in containing the epidemic, people are going to be much more positive about the impact of HIV and we'll be able to reduce the stigma. But we need to work with communities. We need to be in there talking to people, helping them help each other, peer support for each other. Like I saw in Malawi recently, women were coming together, supporting each other because they've been found to be positive through the prevention of mother-to-child transmission program.
Yes.
But also working very closely with the chief, and the chief taking accountability to make sure that stigma is actually dealt with at that level.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. Dr. Chiwe Luo, thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you. I think I'll have my dinner tonight.
Thank you very much. Dr. Chiwe Luo is Deputy Director HIV Program at UNICEF. He's also the Senior Advisor and Technical Team Leader, Country Program HIV Scale-Up at UN Headquarters in New York. For more on HIV/AIDS, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington, and until next week, stay safe and healthy. Good night.